We'll discuss Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 9, the most confidential knowledge, Text 1. Everyone here understands English? That's it. All right, do we have someone who can translate for this?
Yeah.
As we can read on this poster here, the Bhagavad Gita is the greatest dialogue ever. And the stars of the show are Krishna and Arjuna at Kurukshetra. Of course, those of you from India know that even today you can go to Kurukshetra. What makes Kurukshetra so special? There's so many places in India, so many kshetras, but why Kurukshetra? It is special because anything in relation to Lord Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, is as good as Krishna. And that not only means that the battlefield of Kurukshetra is as good as Krishna, but also the words that Krishna spoke with Arjuna on that battlefield are as good as Krishna. We may wonder how we can approach Krishna in this day and age. We should think about that. We have many goals in our life. Career goals, educational goals, family goals. First, you want to succeed materially, and then you have a family, and you want your children to succeed materially, and then they have a family, and you want your grandchildren to succeed materially.
Yeah.
But we have to understand what is real success. To give you real success in your life, Krishna had this dialogue with Arjuna. How do you rate different dialogues? How do you decide which dialogues are better than others? The best dialogue is that which brings you to your original constitutional position as pure spirit soul, part of Krishna, the Supreme Soul. The best dialogue does not promise you material benefit, because material benefit is so temporary. It's finished in a few seconds. You can approach the devas, the demigods, for material benefits. You may think, oh, that will be very nice to have more wealth, to have a beautiful wife or husband, to have very good children. Yes, these things are very important. But more important than those things is the knowledge that material things cannot satisfy us. That's the kind of knowledge that Krishna gives. Not only the negative, that material things cannot satisfy us, but also the positive, that we are meant for a loving relationship with Krishna, which cannot compare tiny, temporary material things. So Bhagavad Gita will teach you simultaneously the positive and the negative. Bhagavad Gita was spoken in about a half hour, 30 minutes, on the battle of Kurukshetra between two armies. This is a most practical situation, and Krishna has purposely done it like this, arranged it like this, because Lord Krishna knows your tendency. You will say, it is very nice what Lord Sri Krishna has spoken, but in real life, it's very difficult. We are practical persons, and we respect Lord Sri Krishna, but when we have to live our life, and that is something different. Just so you cannot say like that, Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita on a battlefield, the most practical place. where so much management is required, so many crucial decisions are required, so much strategy, tact. There, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, just to show you. And who did Krishna speak Bhagavad Gita to? Did he speak it to a brahmana? Did he speak it to a sannyasi? Did he speak it to someone who was externally a sadhu? No, he spoke it to Arjuna, a military man and a family man. This way, all our excuses are thrown out the window. Krishna knows, you'll say, but Bhagavad Gita is very nice for the sadhus, for the brahmacharis, for the sannyasis. But it's different. When you have a family, you are working, you are studying, it's different. So Krishna knows, he'll say like that. Therefore he spoke Bhagavad Gita to a family man, to a working man. Arjuna's occupation was to fight, to protect, to govern. The more that we understand Bhagavad Gita as the literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord, Krishna present before us as his book, the more we can benefit from Bhagavad Gita. You see, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, can appear to you in such a way that your senses can receive him. You cannot dictate your approach to God, but the Supreme Lord can arrange an approach for you. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna appears to you within the range of your sense perception. By his grace, by his mercy, you are limited and tiny. So you cannot approach the unlimited. But because the unlimited has unlimited possibilities, the unlimited can fit within your limited perception. Please try to understand this point. When things come from Krishna's side, anything can happen. When things come from your side, things are very limited. So the whole point of bhakti yoga is to arrange your life so that Krishna will be present in the center. Not on the side, but in the center. But sometimes we are afraid. If Krishna becomes too much in the center, maybe my material wealth will, and success will be affected. Krishna is not known for giving material wealth. Actually, even if you have material desires, it is better to worship Krishna. That is the conclusion of Shukadeva Goswami in Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the graduate study to Bhagavad Gita. Shukadeva Goswami says to Maharaj Pritchett, Akama sarvakama va moksha-kama udharati tibrena bhakti yogena. Krishna says, Shukadeva Goswami says, that whether you are akama, free from all material desires, sarvakama, full of material desires, or number three, mokshakama, you are very eager for liberation from material existence. Doesn't matter. Tibrena bhakti yogena. You should focus upon Lord Krishna. Now, it is true that the most intelligent thing you can do is to come to Krishna for spiritual advancement in pure love of God. Nevertheless, if you're like a child who approaches the parent for something that the parent can give so easily, still it's better you approach. Just like, let us say you have a child and your child asks you, Please, please, I beg you, please give me 1 euro. I'm doing so much puja. I'm offering so much prayers. Please, 1 euro. Please. What will the parents say? That's all you want. Here, take it. So this is what it's like when we approach Krishna for material desires. It's not very important. Krishna can give much better things than temporary material desires. How many years can you keep your material benefits? It's so difficult, yes, holding on to your wealth in this very lifetime. So much anxiety. Will I keep my job? Will I be downsized? What will become of my employment? What will become of my bank account? Will the currency go down? Now the euro is going down a bit because of problems in the EU. What will happen to my pension fund? Such anxiety about these material benefits. But the spiritual benefits will always remain in your spiritual bank account. They cannot be taxed. They cannot be taken away. That's why Lord Sri Krishna says in the second chapter of the Gita, Sarvamakrisatarmasya prayate mahatobaya. Even just a little advancement in bhakti protects you from the greatest danger. Now, what is the greatest danger? That you will lose your money? Is the greatest danger that you will lose your job? We fear these things. Is the greatest danger that you will not be able to continue at the university? No. The greatest danger is that you will lose your human form of life. So where is our program for preserving our greatest asset? Because this human form of life gives you the ability to develop consciousness to understand what is God, what is our relationship with God. Now this chapter is called The Most Confidential Knowledge. Can you close the story, possibly? Let us hear as Lord Sri Krishna speaks. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Idam tu te guyatamam pravakshyami anasuyave jnanam vijnana sahitam yaj gatta mokshyase shubha. So who are we listening to? So many persons can speak, but we are listening to Bhagavan Sri Krishna. We should understand the full significance of Bhagavan Sri Krishna. What does Bhagavan mean? The possessor of all opulences, unlimitedly. Bhagavan is not a title you can just give to any villager in India. Bhagavan is not a title that you get just because you have some little mystic power. Bhagavan means you have unlimited opulence. So when you truly understand what is Bhagavan, what is God, naturally you'll accept Lord Sri Krishna as Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is unlimitedly deep in all the opulences. The great Vedic scholars have identified that there are 6 main opulences. Wealth, strength, fame, knowledge, renunciation, beauty. Who do you know who is unlimitedly deep in all these things? When you examine Krishna, you'll see. He has all these opulences in unlimited depth. Therefore, you understand Krishna is the Supreme Person. We are little persons. We have a little bit of opulence. Some of you, you have a little strength. Some of you have a little beauty. Some have a little knowledge. Some have a little money. But who here is unlimitedly deep in all these things? That is Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna speaks, we listen with great attention. He has the qualifications. Just like if I bring before you a world-famous financial expert in how to make money. Everyone will listen very carefully.
Yes.
Oh. I will teach you how to invest 10,000 euros, and I guarantee you, in 2 years, you'll have 100,000 euros. All of you will be listening. It's very important. But Krishna can give you information, knowledge that is much more valuable. Our material wealth will not save us from the cycle of repeated birth and death. Our academic degrees will not save us from the cycle of repeated birth and death. Now, does that mean to practice bhakti yoga, to be Krishna conscious? You cannot have a job, you cannot have wealth, you cannot have any academic degrees? No, it doesn't mean that. It simply means you should recognize what is temporary and what is eternal, and make your main emphasis in life upon what is eternal. That's all. Krishna did not tell Arjuna to give up his occupation as a warrior. What did Krishna tell him in Bhagavad Gita? Mamanushma yujam cha. Fight and think of me. Nimitra matram bhavasavyasachan. Arjuna, you can only be an instrument in this battle. That is the whole point of bhakti yoga, to be an instrument for Krishna, because we are part of Krishna. So let us first understand the super excellent position of Bhagavan and Sri Krishna. It's not that anyone is Bhagavan. No, you must understand that word and what it means. And then you know only Lord Krishna can be Bhagavan. Sometimes great devotees of the Lord are called Bhagavan because of they have powers given to them by Krishna. Not little powers for producing a little gold in their hand or something. But great, great powers in the universe. Sometimes, it's like Narada Muni, sometimes called Bhagavan, because he can travel throughout the universe chanting Hare Krishna, playing on his veena. But generally, only Krishna has this title, Bhagavan. Now, what is Bhagavan Sri Krishna saying? Idam tute guhyatamam. I'm going to speak to you something which is very confidential. What is that confidential thing? Most confidential thing that Krishna is going to explain in this chapter? The activities of the spirit soul in perfection. You see, it is preliminary knowledge to understand you're not the body, your spirit soul. But that's the ABCs of spiritual life. Confidential, most confidential knowledge means to understand what does the spirit soul do when perfect. Activities in perfection. Otherwise, we'll think that to be perfect means to do nothing, to sit still, to just empty yourself out. Sometimes it is said you become like an empty water pot, and then when someone taps on it, you can hear a sound. We actually need to know what it means to be empty. To be empty means to be free of material desires and be full of spiritual desires. You must have something. You must possess something. So Bhagavad Gita is going to teach you what is the most valuable thing to possess. In that way, you're empty in that you're free, you're devoid of material desires, because you're full of spiritual desires. Now, Krishna says, Idam tute guhyatamam pravakshyami anasuyave. Arjuna, I'm going to speak this to you because you're anasuya, you're not envious. You're never envious of me. Why is that a qualification? because as long as we are envious of Krishna, we'll not take him seriously. What would make us envious of Krishna? Well, Krishna has more, and we only have a little. Therefore, sometimes misguided, foolish persons say, we all are Krishna. Everyone is Krishna. Or Krishna and all the demigods, they are equal. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches you to respect the demigods as representatives of the Lord for managing the cosmos. But still, you must recognize the demigods are part of Krishna. They're not equal to Krishna. Krishna is the source of everyone and everything. So sometimes, there is this envy of Krishna. Just like if you meet someone who's more successful than you, you may get a little envious. You know what that feels like. It's an ugly feeling. This man has more money. This man has a higher position than me. This girl is more pretty than me. This girl has a better husband than me. This girl has more saris than me. You can have these kind of not good feelings. And we can also, with those kind of low feelings, think of a Supreme Personality of God in that way. I'm thinking of one Leela, one pastime of Krishna, the 10th canto of Bhagavatam. There was a king named Pondraka, and he had received a benediction from Lord Shiva that he could imitate Krishna in terms of appearance. Lord Shiva gave him that benediction. Lord Shiva is Ashutosh. He's easily pleased, easily angered. So this Pondraka worshipped Lord Shiva and said, please give me the benediction that I can resemble Krishna, because actually I am the real Krishna. Lord Shiva, you want that? Okay, you take it. So then this king Pondraka, he sent a message to Krishna in Dwarka. Krishna is in his governing house, the Sudharma governing house, and he's there with his relatives, King Ugrasen and others. But Balaram wasn't there. Lord Balaram had gone to Vrindavan. So Pondraka knew that, and he thought, now is the appropriate time to strike. Balaram is gone. Only Krishna is there in Dwarka. So Pondraka sent a messenger, and the messenger spoke his message aloud in the Sudharma assembly hall in Dwarka. Pondraka is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has come to this world to deliver the pious and annihilate the miscreants. You all should surrender immediately to him. Krishna should give up his imitation club disc, lotus flower, and understand that Pondraka is actually Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of God. When Krishna and the residents of Dwarka heard this, the residents, they just laughed for a long time. Long time. And Krishna enjoyed their laughter. They just laughed. So then Krishna sent his message back to Pondraka. He told the messenger, you tell your majesty this, that I will never give up my emblems. I will never give up my club, my disc, my lotus flower, like that. In fact, this is what's going to happen to him. You tell him that I'm a black snake named Krishna, and I gobble up sinful frogs like him. And you tell him that with my disc I will cut off his head, and his head will be the food for meat-eating birds like vultures, and his body will be a feast for dogs. You tell him that. You see, everything is there in Krishna. All the attributes are there, but in perfection. So the messenger went back to bring the message to Pondraka. But Krishna did not even wait for him to receive the message. Immediately, Krishna left Dwarka to attack. Because Krishna is acting as a Kshatriya. So a huge battle happened when Pondraka and his friend, the other friend, king of Kashi, when they heard Krishna was coming, immediately without hesitation, they went out of the city for battle. These are Kshatriyas, Vedic warriors. They don't fear battle, they actually like battle. I don't know if you've ever met military persons who actually like to be in the army. You've met some persons like that? In India, the military is very famous in that they take pride in their craft. They don't mind to fight. They have long warrior tradition. So Pondraka and the king of Kashi, they were warriors, so immediately they went out for the challenge. And a huge battle ensued. A huge battle happened. And the Yadu dynasty annihilated Pondraka's forces. And then it was time to deal with Pondraka himself. So Krishna told him, "You asked me to give up my disc. Huh? I'm going to give it up now. Are you ready?" First, Krishna noticed Pondraka's imitation. Krishna came face to face with Pondraka. Pondraka had imitation Srivatsa emblem on his chest, a little tuft of white hair that's on the chest of Krishna. Pondraka had an imitation Kastuba gem. He had yellow cloth. He had imitated Krishna very nicely, so nicely, because Lord Shiva had given him that benediction. Still, it was clear he was an imitation. So when Krishna saw him, he laughed. Just like, let's say, someone would walk into this house now who was imitating you. Same clothes, playing harmonium. You would laugh. You know it's not you, but still, the person is trying so hard to look like you. It's funny. So Krishna laughed. But then Krishna got down to business. "Okay, you asked me to give up my disc, my chakra. I'm going to give it up. Are you ready?" So, with the chakra, Krishna cut off Pondraka's head. But that left one other person. It left the king of Kashi, who was a supporter of Pondraka. So, when the king of Kashi had left his city, the present Varanasi, he had told his queens, "When I come back, you'll see Krishna's head. I will have his head." He told his queens that. And naturally, the queens, being ladies, they told everyone in the city, "Do you know what our husband said? Our husband said when he comes back, he's going to bring Krishna's head." So, that's a very effective form of communication. Well, when Krishna was fighting with the king of Kashi, he cut off his head in such a way that the head of the king of Kashi went flying through the air and landed at the gate of the city, the king of Kashi's own city. So the people, they saw this head come flying through the air, landing right at the gate of their city. So, you know what they thought at first. Ah, our Lord has delivered his promise. Here is Krishna's head. So this head with jewels, jeweled earrings. Then they went and looked. Oh no, it's our king's head. Immediately all the wives began to lament. Oh, my Lord, your God, what can be done? What can be done? So the son of the king of Kashi, he was very angry. This Krishna has killed my father. He knew just what to do. He gathered together some ritualistic brahmanas and said, we are going to do yajnas, sacrifices for worshipping Lord Shiva. So they did that. He worshipped Lord Shiva very carefully. And then Lord Shiva said, he appeared and said, yes, what would you like? And he said, I want a great demon to come out of the sacrificial fire who will annihilate the killer of my father. So Lord Shiva, being very smart of course, said, yes, I'll give you that benediction that there will be a powerful demon who will be an enemy to those who are against Brahmana culture. So the son of the king of Kashi, didn't really figure it out. Oh, thank you, my lord. Thank you. A benediction from Lord Shiva. Now, revenge will be mine. So he and his brahmanas, not really brahmanas, because true brahmanas don't perform this kind of sorcery, this black magic. They don't do that. So these were like perverted brahmanas. They did this black magic, and then from the fire came this huge demon. And then they directed the demon, go towards Dwarka, kill the one who killed the king of Kashi's, killed the prince of Kashi's father, the king. So this demon began to march towards Dwarka, surrounded by an army of ghouls and ghosts. Lord Shiva gives those kind of benedictions. You want some ghosts to join you and cause havoc? Okay, here's some ghosts. Take them. So they all began to march upon Dwarka. And when they reached Dwarka, the citizens were terrified. Oh, what's happening? Because this huge demon had legs the size of palm trees. So, very tall, like a big hill. So, the residents of Dwarka, the Dwarka Vasis, Krishna's people, the Yadu dynasty, they were very terrified. And they immediately went to tell Krishna. What was Krishna doing at that time? He was in one of his palaces, playing with dice. As devotees of the Lord, as Krishna Bhaktas, we don't gamble. Yeah. But Krishna's in the role of a Kshatriya, and Kshatriyas are allowed to gamble. So he's playing with dice. What does Krishna have to win? He owns everything. But still, as his pastime, as his enjoyment, he's throwing the dice. This is Leela. You don't have anything to gain, but just for fun, you're doing it. Krishna cannot lose anything. Everything is his, but still he's throwing the dice. So then, the news was given to him. This huge demon and an army of ghouls, ghosts, are attacking. What did Krishna do? He just laughed. And he continued playing with the dice. He did not even get up to do anything about it. He just dispatched his Sudarshan Chakra, his disc weapon. And the disc weapon went through the air and chased Pondra, chased this monster, and forced the monster and his cohorts to go back to the city of Kashi. Now, the way black magic works is the entity that you call The entity that you summon forth has to kill someone. So because this demon failed to kill the person that the Prince of Kashi directed him to, he had to kill the prince. And remember, Lord Shiva's benediction was, this monster will be an enemy to those who are an enemy of Brahminical culture. So if the whole project was doomed to fail. So this fiery demon killed the Prince of Kashi, and then behind him, Krishna Sudarshan Chakra came and burned the whole city to the ground. Because Krishna had promised, not only will I finish off Pondraka, but I'll finish off anyone who supports Pondraka. In this way, setting a clear lesson that who can dare to say they are the Supreme Personality of God, they are Krishna. So it's a powerful lesson. Even today, you'll find some small-time yogi with a little bit of mystic power saying, I am God, I am Krishna, I am Balaram. You'll find that. You can go to India today and you'll find persons who say that. I was Rama. I was Krishna. Now I'm Baba. Yes. Why do people want to say that they are Krishna? Because of envy. So Krishna is telling Arjuna in this verse, Idam tu te guyatamam pravakshyam yanasuyave. Because you are never envious of me, I'm going to speak to you this most precious confidential knowledge. Now, what will be the result of that knowledge? Today, people are very result-orientated. They want to see what are the practical effects. When they go to school, to the university, they don't want to study philosophy anymore, humanities, liberal arts. No, they want something like business or engineering to bring a result. It's like in New Zealand, where I'm based. Everyone knows that you study philosophy in university, and then what do? When you graduate? You become a house painter. Everyone knows that. Who cares for philosophy? What is wanted are engineers. Accountants. There's a big shortage now in New Zealand, in case any of you are studying this. They need engineers, and they need accountants, business systems managers. So any of you, any university students here? No students?
Our degree.
Graduates? Alright. So, if you have these qualifications, then you can go to New Zealand. So, but if you're a philosophy graduate, forget it. They'll hand you a broom, hand you a paintbrush, hand you a mop. That's it. Those people say, today we're so practical, we want results. What can philosophy do for you? Just a bunch of talk. But here you see Krishna's spiritual engineering in action. Jnanam, vijnana, sahitam, yajgata, mokshase, shubhat. I'm going to teach you both theoretical knowledge and realized knowledge, experienced knowledge. When you assimilate this, when you understand this, what will be the result? You'll be free from all the miseries of material existence. So what can be more practical than that? If I say to you, I'm going to teach you something so that you are guaranteed to become rich, you'll be very happy, yes?
Oh, yes. This is a very nice strategy.
I'm going to teach you something that you'll have a big house with all the conveniences and a beautiful wife who will do exactly what you say, and children who will adore you. I'm going to teach you this. Oh, yes. But Krishna is doing much better than that. He's saying, I'm going to teach you something by which you'll become free from all the miseries of material life. And what do we say?
We have no time.
No time for this. We are so busy. This is our foolishness. We don't know what real wealth is, what real knowledge is. Yajyakta mokshase shubhat. Knowing this, you'll be released from the miserable material condition. Any intelligent person wants at least that. At least that. So that is here, Srila Prabhupada's purport. As a devotee hears more and more about the Supreme Lord, he becomes enlightened. This hearing process is recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam, where it is said, the messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are full of potencies, and these potencies can be realized if topics regarding the Supreme Godhead are discussed amongst devotees. This cannot be achieved by the association of mental speculators or academic scholars, for it is realized knowledge. The devotees are constantly engaged in the Supreme Lord's service. The Lord understands the mentality and sincerity of a particular living entity who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and gives him the intelligence to understand the science of Krishna in the association of devotees. Discussion of Krishna is very potent, and if a fortunate person has such association and tries to assimilate the knowledge, then he will surely make advancement towards spiritual realization. Lord Krishna, in order to encourage Arjuna to higher and higher elevation in his potent service, describes in this ninth chapter matters more confidential than any he has already disclosed. That more confidential knowledge is what does the spirit soul do when free from material illusion? It's not that you do nothing and just sit silently. You must be active. How can you be active perfectly? That is the confidential knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. How to use your senses for perfection. If you don't know how to use your senses for perfection, it doesn't mean you're not going to use your senses. No, you'll use your senses in such a way that you'll become bound to the material world through karmic activity. So the most confidential knowledge is not how to sit and do nothing. Mona Vrata, just stay in a lonely place and have a vow of silence. Often, when you go to India, in the villages, even in the cities, in Mumbai I've also seen, someone like a sadhu will be sitting even on the street in a crowded intersection in Mumbai, and he'll have a sign in front of him, "I have not spoken for 30 years. I have been silent for 30 years. And then there's a little plate in front of him, and people put some coins there. So ordinary people think, "Oh, this is very spiritual. He must be a sadhu. He has not spoken for 30 years. Mona Vrata, silence." But this is not Krishna's standard of perfection that he talks about in Bhagavad Gita. Real Mona Vrata, the real vow of silence, is to only speak about Krishna. That's Mona Vrata. Not just keep your mouth closed. You have a tongue. Use it for Krishna's pleasure. That is real Mona Vrata. So, we want to know how to use all our senses, all our resources in Krishna's service, because actually our senses and resources belong to Krishna. The more we understand how to engage our abilities in the service of the Lord, the more our life will become successful. That is the method of Bhakti Yoga. How to act in perfection. We should be so much interested in this knowledge. We should not say, "I have no time for this." We should not say, "Oh, my grandmother knows all about this, so that is good enough." We should not say that. No. Each one of us has a desperate need for this knowledge. Then we can say our life is successful. So that is the message of Lord Sri Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. I hope that you will all take it seriously. The knowledge of Bhagavad Gita can give the greatest benefit to the world. All right, we'll stop here and ask if you have any questions.
When you feel that you are envious of someone, what is the way to get free from
envy? Means indirect appreciation. You're only envious of someone who has something better than you. So instead of being envious, just appreciate directly. Oh, you've done so nicely. Envy is an ugly feeling because you recognize this person is better, so I want to drag him or her down. Envy is like them. But instead, simply directly appreciate, oh, you are better. Let me glorify you. And then the envy will go away.
But his question in the other way, if I know that he is envious of me, then how to treat with him?
You can follow in Krishna's footsteps and do not reveal confidential things to someone who's envious of you. That is allowed. But you have to tolerate. Yeah. Has happened to you at work or at the university? Someone's envious of you?
Maybe.
Yeah. I see it all the time in New Zealand, Australia, particularly persons come from India, they take some engineering post, financial post, IT post, and then the Australians and New Zealanders, they get very envious. You're not from this country. Why are you getting such high position? I get envious. I know one case. One devotee was from Delhi, and he graduated from university in India, and then he came. Actually, he studied in Australia, and then he took a job with, which at the time was the top management of consulting firm, Anderson. At the time it was top. So, very prestigious job. So, the managers, they put him, because he was new, he was about 26 or 27 years old, with his MBA, everything. They, just to test him, they put him in a position under an Australian girl who was 24. She had joined the company when she was 18. She did not go to university, but she joined the company when she was 18 and worked her way up. So she was the department head. So they put this young Indian man under her. And she had a mission. She said, I know about India. How you mistreat the women. I know how you think women are not equal. I'm going to teach you a lesson. So she made his life hell. Finally speaking, come here, boy. Do this, do that. And, you know, what can he say? You know, he wanted to work for this most prestigious company, and he had to tolerate. He went to the senior partners and they told him, yes, we know that she is mistreating you, but if you really want to be a part of this company, you'll tolerate. So what can he do? So he would just order him, do this, do that, just like he's an office boy. And here he is, MBA, you know. She's younger than him, you know. And so, it's very, very intense for him. She was envious. You come to our country and take the best jobs, I'll teach you a lesson. Then one day he came, on Monday morning he came to the office, and there she was at her desk crying. She had had a very bad weekend with her boyfriend. So he was crying, and he tried to ignore her. But then she said, "Please come, let's talk. Can we go out together for a cup of coffee?" And he goes, "What's to do here?" So he was just amazed. 1 minute she's very tough, Lord of the Universe. Next minute, "Oh, please, can we go for coffee? Let's have a talk." So these are the different sides of material existence. And envy is one of them. There's confusion, lamentations, another. So when someone is envious of you, you have to tolerate. That's the nature of material existence, envy. Envy between persons, envy between nations. What happens in India if the Pakistanis win the cricket match? Envy. They must have cheated. So we have to look at our own envy. And we'll see that ultimately we are in this material world because we are envious of Krishna. Just like Pondraka. Therefore Krishna says, "Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I'm going to teach you the most valuable asset." Anything else?
My name is Vijay from Chennai. Student here.
Mm-hmm. What are you studying?
I'm studying mechanical. Question is, from the story which you referred from Srila Pondraka. Why don't Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna, use one of his opulence to change the mindset of King Pondraka and his brother?
His friend, King
Instead of killing the whole dynasty and the family.
Whatever Krishna does is the best. It's for the best. Do you know what happened to Pondraka? That's a good point. Because he was always thinking of Krishna, even with an envious attitude, still, he was always absorbed in thinking of Krishna. Therefore, he got liberation through Vaikuntha. And he went to the spiritual world, and he there had the same form as Krishna. So, who can be more merciful than Krishna?
So does it mean that to reach to Vaikuntha, there is one way to fight with Krishna?
You can, but you have to be very special demon. Krishna doesn't fight with small-time demons. For them, simply a tsunami or earthquake finishes them. So it's very difficult to go to Vaikuntha by being a demon who's killed by Krishna. It's much easier to be positively Krishna conscious.
I think positive and negative are very different.
No. Oh, so? Okay, you think that positive and negative are no different. What about your relationship? You're going to marry a wife who hates you? Positive, negative, same. No, you want positive.
I'm not saying same, but if you say that to reach to Vaikuntha using negative way is very difficult than positive way, I think positive way may be very difficult.
No.
For example, you say that this Krishna consciousness, you have to be to follow the bhakti yoga.
That's what Krishna says. I'm only saying what Krishna says.
Okay, but suppose...
Personally, I may think, football is the way. But Krishna says bhakti yoga.
Okay, Krishna says bhakti yoga.
Right.
But suppose there are some people, there are many different type of people in the world. Some people are heart-oriented, they think more emotional. And there are some people who are mind-oriented.
But Krishna is speaking for all types. Krishna speaks to the head and the heart. Combined. Because the head and the heart are simply Krishna's energies. He's the master of all the energies. You cannot say Bhagavad Gita is for the head only or Bhagavad Gita is for the heart only. No, Bhagavad Gita is for the spirit soul. That you have to understand. You want to understand these things, then you must become qualified. Just like if I want to understand mechanical engineering, I must have qualification. Maybe I become envious of him. Ooh, mechanical engineering. You're going to have a big career. I want also to be a mechanical engineer. I will go to your class tomorrow. I will sit there.
You will have a very difficult time.
You can do it, I can do it. If you can do it, anyone can do it. You'll say, you know, you have to have qualification. Just like here, we have my disciple, Charanaranya Dasa. She's PhD in astrophysics. So suppose I say, I understand all these things immediately. She will laugh. You have no qualification. Then, also, you know, my disciple Chandidas, he's translating it. He's doing his PhD in internet technology. If I say, oh, I know everything about all these things. You can know, I can know. What's the big deal? He knows. Oh, such intricate knowledge. You have to have qualification. So similarly, if you want to understand Krishna, you must have qualification. You cannot just say, oh, I know football, I know cricket, I know Krishna. You must have qualification.
But how then do we qualify?
Very good question. Brilliant question. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Bhaktosime Sivajeti Rahasyam Getarutama. Arjuna, I'm speaking Bhagavad Gita to you because you are my devotee, my bhakta, and my sakha, my friend. If you want to understand Bhagavad Gita, then you have to take up the process for being Krishna's devotee and Krishna's friend. Then you can understand Rahasyam Yeta Uttama, the greatest mystery. You see, if you want me to explain in other terms, I can say that actually all knowledge is subjective. It depends on your state of consciousness what you can understand. Now, Western knowledge has this superstition that your level of consciousness has nothing to do with your knowledge. You can be a drunkard, you can be a debauched, degraded person. That's just your personal affair. But your knowledge is something else. But this is not the Vedic system. The Vedic system is that according to the standard of your consciousness, the purity of your consciousness, that determines what you can understand. Now, what you'll say is, well, if I have electrical knowledge, it does not matter whether I'm a drunkard or not. I have electrical knowledge. But from the Vedic viewpoint, electrical knowledge is recognized as knowledge, but not important knowledge. It's called shumpajan, ordinary knowledge of material things. We want divya jnan, divine knowledge of the spiritual technology. To understand that kind of knowledge, important knowledge, you have to refine your consciousness, purify your consciousness. Just something for you to think about. Any other questions?
Why is there so many religions?
Actually, there's only one religion, love of God. But there are different levels of understanding what is God. Just like we could say, what about knowledge of mechanical engineering? When I was a little boy, my parents got me, I don't know what you say in German, but in English it's called an erector set. It's like metal things that you, yes, what do you call it in German?
Ball nuts.
Yeah. Little kids play with them, you know, screws and pieces of metal, and you make something. So I could say, oh, I'm a mechanical engineer. And you say, no, no, this is very, very elementary. It's something, but it's very tiny. So there are different levels. And to understand what is God, there are also different levels. If you say God is good, that's very elementary knowledge. If you say God is the all-pervading Brahman, that's very elementary knowledge. Something, but very tiny. So there are many so-called religions because they're giving you just a small aspect, a small vision of what is God. But if you want the complete understanding, the comprehensive understanding, then you take directly from Krishna. And you'll understand impersonal, personal. You'll understand the role of the demigods, their position, to understand the spiritual world, the material world, everything. So there are different levels.
Can't I get this knowledge from Quran or Bible?
You can get something. In Bhagavad Gita you'll find things that are in other scriptures. Which one are you taking from? Which one are you taking from? Knowledge from?
No, I'm not taking knowledge right now from any scripture. This is my question.
Okay.
Why only this is the way? You say that this is the best way. This
okay, which way are you doing?
I'm not doing any way.
That is the problem.
Yes, I want the solution of this.
Very good. Very intelligent. Okay. So, it is your responsibility as a human being to get the most comprehensive spiritual knowledge possible. Just like if I'm playing with my, what is the term? Erector set, what is it called? Yes. That is something. Suppose I'm playing with this and he comes and I tell him, just see, I'm a mechanical engineer. He will laugh. He says, oh, you have something, but there's so much more to be had. No. I have mechanical engineering, just look at me play. So, you'll find different amounts of spiritual knowledge in the religions of the world. But you want the best. Just like if I say to you, you have a choice. You can get your mechanical engineering degree in Moldavia, or you can go to MIT. What will you take? No question. I want the best knowledge. I'll go to MIT. I'm not going to go to Moldavia. You know where Moldavia is? It's, I think, east of Romania. It's a little tiny country. Completely criminal. Completely run by a mafia. It's like gangster republic. Moldavia. So, you can go to university there. Terespol, I think, is the capital city. You can go there and study mechanical engineering, or you can go to MIT. You say, no, I must have the best knowledge. You give me a chance to go to MIT, I'll go there. Similarly, you have to have that attitude about spiritual knowledge. Krishna is giving the best knowledge. So you take.
I say, Jesus Christ gives the best knowledge. I have this opinion, then.
So are you following?
No, if I say that Jesus Christ gives the best knowledge, Muhammad gives the best knowledge, how can you justify that only Krishna gives the best knowledge?
You have to know. You have to know. Just like he knows. MIT is better than University in Trestful, Moldavia. He knows.
That is very easy to know. This is very easy to know that.
It is easy also to know that Krishna gives the best. How can you say no? You don't know. You just have to say, okay, Swamiji, it could be possible. Right? Yes, you have to say like that. I don't know for sure. Maybe you're saying the truth. It could be possible.
Maybe you know, see the one of the way, but not the best way.
How do you know?
I don't know. Maybe I...
Then you have to find out.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes. I have to find out whether this is the best way, or this is the only way, or this is one of the way.
How are you going to do that?
Yes, I have to understand. I have to try to...
Okay, we have books. You take, you read.
Yes, of course. I can read this book, I can read Quran, I can read Bible.
Okay, go ahead.
See what the...
Go ahead. Yes. Right, when are you starting on this? Go ahead.
And then I have to think whether this Gita suits me, or Bible suits me, or Quran suits me.
No, you have to be scientific. Yes. You go into the laboratory and make the test. Krishna says this is the best. So you enter the bhakti laboratory, you apply your scientific instruments, your senses, and you see. No blind faith. No time. Take a seat. Too busy. That's why Krishna says, Arjuna, because you're not envious of me, I'm going to teach you. Envy means no one can tell me anything. I know. We cannot benefit ourselves if we have that attitude. So it's very good that you are wanting to understand these things. So you hear from Krishna, apply your senses, you'll see. That's all. You have to become experienced in this kind of thing.
Since how long you have been following this spiritual life?
It's important for you to know that?
Yes.
You want to know my qualifications? I was digging in my garden and arranging my flowers, and then a lightning bolt of knowledge hit me. And then I realized that I am the ultimate. And then I went to India and told all the people, and they said, "Oh, you are a Swamiji." That's what happened. No. If you want to be bona fide, genuine teacher of Bhagavad Gita, you must study under someone who is a genuine teacher of Bhagavad Gita. So I studied under my spiritual master, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So then, that's my certification. It's like he's learning mechanical engineering under certification. He's going through the process. I also went through the process to understand Bhagavad Gita under a genuine teacher. Today's student becomes tomorrow's teacher. And that teacher trains other students who in the future become teachers. In this way, things go on.
Can I make a question? How do you concentrate on your own interests? Sense what's important for your own life, getting spiritual information or understand things, and getting free from all these very important influences coming from other people and companies. Or society around you influencing all the time again.
You have to understand who you are. Otherwise life is very bewildering. Are you this body? Are you your mind, or are you something different? You have to first understand that preliminary knowledge.
But maybe you find out that you're quite lonely.
Everyone is lonely in this world. Haven't you noticed? You're just being honest. Everyone is lonely.
Everybody is, but you can feel more or less lonely.
Who can help you in your loneliness?
Yourself.
You come into this world with nothing, you leave with nothing. But actually, accompanying you in your heart is the Super Soul. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that in every living entity there is the soul and the Super Soul. But you've forgotten your friend, the Super Soul, who accompanies you from one body to another. So in Bhagavad Gita, the Super Soul is speaking to you. It's good that you feel this way. In this kind of consciousness, you can approach Krishna and get real knowledge. What will happen if you depend upon temporary support in this world? Maybe you'll meet some man and he'll say, "I can solve all your problems. Just depend upon me." Will that solve your problem?
No. No, they run away after 3 months.
Exactly. No. Oh God, that's the male program. They pick the flower and then they go. Yes. No integrity.
No, too big problem. Maybe too big problem.
Too big.
When you said, "I'm going to solve all your problems," and he will not manage, then he will run away.
How can he solve your problems when he hasn't solved his problems? But when you get lonely, you become desperate. You know, desperate? Then you want to believe anything someone says because you're desperate. Maybe it's true. I'm tired of being alone. Maybe he really is serious. Maybe he's not lying, right? When you're desperate. You're tired of looking at the walls of your flat. You know, no one is there, only you. So then someone comes and promises you, "Oh, this, that." And you listen, because you have to have someone. Better you make the ultimate solution. You learn about Krishna. You revive your lost relationship with Krishna. That's the best thing. If you want to depend on the temporary persons of this world, you'll be so disappointed. Because even if you find the greatest husband, what's going to happen?
I have.
What will happen, then?
You'll
see. What will happen? He will die. Maybe.
Maybe.
There's no doubt.
Sooner or later.
Right. Maybe tomorrow, maybe in 10, 20 years. And then you'll be devastated, yes? Yes? Yeah, sure. Mm. But if your husband teaches you about Krishna, then he'll have given you the greatest gift. Then he can go on in peace. He's left you the greatest wealth. Otherwise, an ordinary man cannot do so much. Time is all powerful. Use your intelligence to understand Krishna. That will make your family a success. When there's Krishna in the center of your family, it becomes something else. Ordinary families are everywhere in this world. Has it helped the world any? Everywhere. Because it hasn't helped the world, many people, especially in the West, it's coming to India now too, but many people in the West say, what's the point of having families? It doesn't help the world. You don't need a family to have sense gratification. It's everywhere, just like water. Why go through the problems of having a family? They don't know that the purpose of the family is that the husband and wife assist each other in enlightenment. That is a real family. Where are you from?
From here.
So, please think about that. Bhagavad Gita will teach you how to have the best family. Otherwise, all these things are temporary, they come and go, you know. Actually, do not depend on temporary persons. You'll always be disappointed. Unless that temporary person can give you knowledge of the eternal, then you can depend on that person. How does that sound?
I know a little bit from the basics. I feel that I think like that, but I never concentrate on it. I never work on it like that.
So please work on it. I'm giving you motivational training how to be successful in your career. Okay? Okay?
Yeah. Now this will only make problems, like, because I would hurt my husband laughing. I said, how are you going?
Then
first would run away.
Why? If you start what?
With Krishna and things like that.
No, you just read Bhagavad Gita on your own. First you read on your own.
I have it a long time, but I never wrote it.
Why not? Why did you not read it?
I don't know.
Too busy, yeah?
No, I wanted to put it away for a long time also, but I never was able to throw it away. I know, yeah. I've taken it for 20 years, but I cannot throw it away.
So please allow me to inspire you to open the book, okay? Okay?
Okay, I have to find it.
Yes, start with page one and read to the end. Okay? Your husband's not going to object that you're reading a book, is he?
No.
Okay. He reads books, yes?
Only technical information.
Technical information, okay. So you're reading technical information of the spiritual world. So you both can sit down and read your technology books, but they are of different realms.
Yeah.
Okay? So you read Bhagavad Gita and then you make your conclusion. Okay? Of course you are married, but it also means you're an individual too.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want to read something, that is your affair, right?
Recently I came up to read an article from the United Nations Hindu Human Rights Commission. They come up to say that finally after much survey around the world, they found out there are 92 religions around the world officially recognized, and some 900 and something subsects. So, according to your point of view, I mean, you say that the consciousness of Krishna is the highest religion.
How can you judge?
That's what you're saying.
How can you judge? If you had to make the judgment, how would you do it?
If I were to make a judgment, my grandfather has already told me when I was very young that he said in a phrase from Mahabharata, Shanti Parvam, volume 12, Shri Narada Muni has already said that Satyavad Hidam Bhavet, truth is the most highest of all the religion. So he has already taught me that even though you don't have to follow any religion, just speak the truth.
But Narada Muni is greatest devotee of Krishna.
So he's the one who told this.
Alright, so you know what Narada Muni says and you'll be fine. Narada Muni travels throughout the universe chanting Hare Krishna. So you do like that and everything will be fine. Then you'll be giving the greatest honor to your father.
Okay.
Bhagavad Gita is the most important chapter of Mahabharata. Sometimes it's forgotten that Bhagavad Gita is a chapter in Mahabharata. Most important. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, the graduate study to Bhagavad Gita, you'll read in the first canto that Narada Muni criticizes Vyasadeva, the author who wrote down Mahabharata. He says, you have made things confusing because Bhagavad Gita is only one chapter in Mahabharata, and otherwise Mahabharata is full of intrigue and politics and battles, and the people will become distracted and forget what is the actual main part of Mahabharata. So Narada Muni told Vyasadeva, better you make something directly about the glories of Lord Krishna. That way the people will not be confused. So in that way, Srimad Bhagavatam was presented.
And why do you people insist on reading, reading Gita from what Srila Prabhupada has written, and why not from Ramakrishna Paramahamsa? So do you make some sort of comparisons among them?
Yes, there are so many commentaries on Bhagavad Gita which are not genuine. They twist the words of Krishna. But if you want to benefit from Bhagavad Gita, you have to take your Bhagavad Gita straight, not blended. That's why Krishna tells Arjuna, because you are my devotee and my friend, I'm speaking to you. So in that way, Krishna is demonstrating what is the proper mentality for being able to understand Bhagavad Gita. So many greatest scholars cannot understand Bhagavad Gita. They get bewildered, even though Krishna is speaking so directly. Why do they become bewildered? Because they have some mentality of envy. Not Krishna. No, not possible. This is just mythology. So if you truly want to understand Bhagavad Gita, you have to take Krishna's prescription, his laboratory process.
Then study Sanskrit.
No! Here, everything is very accurately presented.
Each and every translator says.
The Sanskrit in Bhagavad Gita is very simple. Krishna says, Manmana Bhava Madhbhakta, always think of me. Very simple. But so many commentators will say, what this means is the all pervading oneness, or think of you, think of me, we are all it. And so much concoction. Because they're envious of Krishna.
But if you start reading Bhagavad Gita, it is more is of a philosophy. Like if you read 3 page, 4 page, the meaning of all the pages are coming to the same point. Means my point is that.
Which is that point? What is that point?
My point is.
No, what is the point? That you read 3 or 4 pages, it is all coming to that point. What is that point?
It's basically a philosophy.
Okay, what is the point of the philosophy?
The point of philosophy is that it is saying that, okay, believe in God. There is superpower, that is God. But if you go on reading.
No, that is very primitive. Bhagavad Gita is taking you far beyond that. It's very primitive just to believe in God.
But it's not so simple to understand if you read the book.
What is your profession?
I'm an engineer.
What kind?
Mechanical engineer.
That's so simple to understand. You know, why do you go to university to learn to be mechanical engineer? It's so simple. I have my erector set, what do you call it? Same thing, very simple. Yes. I can.
But when, once you enter the university, then you understand it's not so simple.
I have my. I'm the same as you. Mechanical engineering knowledge, I have.
You must be having.
Huh?
I'm not doubting that.
No, it's not true. I don't know anything about mechanical engineering.
No, my
in my university days, I did not take one science or mathematics course.
But my My point is that.
No, there's a point to what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's not so easy to understand it.
But how come you understand mechanical engineering? Why? Because I trust that you're learning in an authorized way.
Authorized way, and there are tutors who are giving.
Okay. So similarly, Krishna will provide for you authorized book, authorized tutor. Okay. You want? Swamiji, I have no time.
Okay, you believe in Krishna, but I believe in Lord Rama. What is the difference in that? Is there any?
Yes. Very good.
I believe in Lord Shiva. I like. Mm. I read scriptures like this Ramayana and Mahabharata, right? Mm. So there is any difference? Is it necessary?
What does Lord Shiva chant? You know what Lord Shiva is doing? He's in Kailash and he's chanting Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. He chants the glories of Lord Ram. You like Lord Ram? Very good. Very good. When you say Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, then you have Rama.
Like, I used to chant Om Namah Shivaya. Is that bad? Or is there any difference between that?
In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that you should approach the source. You respect the demigods, especially Lord Shiva. He is described as the greatest devotee of Vishnu. So, we adore him, but he is not Bhagavan. He is not the source of everything. Just like if I say to you, you are not the mayor, you say? Or
yeah, mayor.
The mayor of Aachen. Am I insulting you? I'm simply saying you're not the mayor. It doesn't mean you're not a nice person, but you're not the mayor. So if we say Lord Shiva is not Bhagavan, it doesn't mean we're insulting.
What about Lord Rama?
Lord Rama, that is Krishna. Rama is an expansion of Krishna.
So if I pray to him or I believe.
Please pray to Lord Ram, please. We'll be very happy. Okay? Be very happy if you pray to Lord Ram. Yes? You like Sita Ram, Lakshman Hanuman? Very good. We have no argument with you. You chant the Hare Krishna mantra, Ram is there. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Ram. Okay? But also, it will be interesting for you to find out more about Krishna. Very good question. You're all asking such nice questions. Your questions were very good. Yes? Very powerful.
And on continuation of this question, which you have appreciated, how do you say Quran is or Bible is not, or I mean, it's very degrading to say Quran and Bible is not so much equal to.
Is it degrading to say that my, what is it?
I mean,
listen.
For diplomatically insulting more than 5% population.
No, when I'm a little, when I'm a child, I'm playing with my erector. What do you call
it?
Does that mean I'm insulting it? If I, you know, it's just the, oh, a better example.
You know German?
You know German? Okay, so that means you have a big German dictionary, yes?
Yes.
And you have one small one, yes?
Yes.
Maybe with some pocket electronic translator?
I do have.
Okay, so the small electronic translator or the pocket dictionary has some value, yes? It's not wrong, but it's not comprehensive. So it's not insulting the pocket dictionary to say that it cannot compare to the unabridged dictionary, is it?
Now, that's the same point which he said, that his question was that you say that the big dictionary which you have is authorized. And
but you can also have it. So don't feel bad. You can also have it. Not simply for me.
You're not leaving to ask me the complete question. Please allow me to ask the complete questions, then all people will understand. So now Musalman, who is also having Quran in his hand, is saying that his book or his culture or whatever he is following is the truth, all pervading, or opulence, whatever, six opulence or seven opulence, whatever.
No, that knowledge is not there in Quran.
So that is what they say. I mean, their book which...
Okay, so please, if you want to take that path, you please take it.
Amen. I'm not taking anything. I'm just asking from that point of what you say. With you, the question.
If you want to know what is God, then you need information. Just like in the Bible, it says, "Love God." But where is the information about God in the Bible? It doesn't mean the Bible is wrong. It just means that it goes up to a certain level. Just like Jesus said, "In my Father's house, there are so many rooms in the mansion." But he doesn't talk about his father. He just gives these hints. I go there to prepare a place for you, he said. But where is the information about that place? Actually, Jesus said, there are many things I want to tell you. He said that to his disciples, but your ears are not ready to hear it. So there are different levels, like in any school. You have to try for the topmost level. That's all.
And you said Gita is the topmost level.
Yes.
Confident.
Gita is graduate study. And then beyond Gita is postgraduate study, Srimad Bhagavatam. You want to see how that is so? Then you take it.
I have it.
All right. Then you'll find out. You put it into action, you'll see. If there is God, we want to know what is God. Not just say, God, oh, I pray to God. That's nice, but it's very preliminary. That's all. I'm glad that you all are very lively. That's a good sign. Yes, all such nice questions, everyone. Very good. Congratulations. Thank you very much. All right.
Thank you.
A pleasure to come here.
It's not a question. I'm also thinking the whole time about one statement, which I read in a book called Bhakti Yoga in Islam, where it said that there is every time this knowledge about God, and it get preached according to time, place, circumstance, and intellect of the people who are listening. And that's why sometimes the prophets cannot give the people the whole knowledge, and that's the point. It's all the same knowledge about God, but it get preached according to time, place, circumstance, and intellect of the people.
Yes, the different levels. Arjuna, where is the man who has the qualities of Arjuna? Any man here like Arjuna? No. So. But because Arjuna was of such high caliber, such high level, Krishna spoke to him these things. But if you're a fisherman living in Galilee, obviously you cannot acquire such knowledge. So, it's practical. You teach someone, as he said, according to their level, their circumstances. That's mercy. Just like, if he starts to tell me about what he learned in mechanical engineering today, it would not be mercy for me. I'll just... But if he tells me something simple, what's something simple I can understand? Some simple engineering principle. Don't put too much stress on this piece of metal or it will bend. Then I can understand. that much I can understand. So, but if he tries to tell me what he's studying today, I will just go, oh. Can't understand? He's not being merciful. Mercy means to speak according to the person's level of understanding. All right, I have to go. Thank you so much.